Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. On today's show, I'll be presenting another in my Health Challenges series. My guest is Rachel Hockett. Hockett was in the first class of women at Yale University, class of 73, when she studied English and theater. She was in the inaugural season of Ithaca Summer Repertory as an actor in 1970, and she was co-founder of Off-Off-Broadway Showcase Theater, West Park Theater. She is currently the co-founding artistic director of Homecoming Players in Ithaca. But in November 2017, she was diagnosed with multiple myeloma. We'll talk about her journey through diagnosis, treatment, and how it has changed her life. And welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tish. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, I'm glad. We're all here.
We're all here. Thank goodness.
Now, let's talk about the fact that you were diagnosed with multiple myeloma in November 2017.
Right.
So tell us what kind of a cancer it is and whether you had symptoms.
Okay, so it's a cancer that involves the production of too many monoclonal cells, which are normal in the body, but when you get too many, it's a bad thing. And that's about all I know. I know that when the doctor did the bone marrow test, my monoclonals were 80%, which is really up there. Mm-hmm. That's how he knew I had multiple myeloma. But I must say, I had no symptoms whatsoever. I felt as fine as I ever do, which at, you know, the age of 66 means the occasional ache and pain and occasional virus, but I had no idea I had this.
That is unbelievable because, you know, sometimes anemia is, I read up a little bit about it.
Yeah.
But you didn't have anything, huh?
No, I didn't. I went for my regular yearly annual physical in August. And I did the regular blood work, and when I got the results a month later, which was a little later than I would have liked,
yeah.
There were some delays, and the doctor went on vacation, et cetera, et cetera. The report said all my labs were normal except for the protein in my blood, which was 9, and it should be between 1 and 2.
So did they tell you that this is a real concern, or just that they wanted to...
She wanted
retest.
Follow-up tests, and she ordered another, several weeks later, she ordered more blood work, a 24-hour urine, which meant I had to save every time I went to the bathroom for 24 hours, which, let me tell you, that's a pain in the butt. Then I went back to her, and she referred me to the oncologist because
the
protein was still high.
Oh, my God. How did you react to that? Were you scared?
I was scared, but, you know, something comes over you when you know that you're on a path to find the answer, and you just kind of put your head down and go. I mean, I was never a person who thought I would get cancer. Who is?
I know.
I always worried that I did, but I never thought I really would.
Yeah,
you know, it's
exactly.
Funny,
I know.
Funny mixture of, oh, that can't happen to me.
Yep, I know. I
but
understand
it happens
that.
To so many of us.
It does. And, you know, some of them have factors like heavy smoking and, you know,
right,
don't
no.
eat right and,
right,
and so
right.
on. But
nothing but McDonald's or whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So you end up with a diagnosis in October, right?
The diagnosis was at the end of November,
just before
Thanksgiving, which made Thanksgiving a little odd.
Oh, my God.
You know, I knew that treatment would be starting. And
how did you take it, though? I mean, did they give you a bunch of information and tell you what the regimen's going to be?
You know, I have a doctor who is so non-alarmist and so thorough and so kind and down-to-earth. There was absolutely no artifice about him whatsoever. And he told me, I'm sorry, it is a myeloma. It was funny, when I went in for my diagnosis, I said, how am I? He said, hi, shook my hand, he always shakes my hand. I said, how am I? He said, you're good. Well, the blood work was good, but the bone marrow, and then he went on to tell me that it was 80% monoclonal, and so that is a myeloma. I thought, okay, great. And he said, several times during that appointment, he said, just let it sink in. Because it is a shocking thing to hear.
Oh, and especially if you feel well.
Right.
You
exactly.
know, people going in with big symptoms might think, oh, okay, this
yeah,
is
no
it.
No wonder, yeah.
Yeah.
So he said, you know, we'll be in touch. And then I went and sat down with the nurse who knew so much. Arthur, my partner, and I went in for about 2 hours and heard about all the drugs I would be taking and all the zillions of possible side effects, but you won't get them all, she said. I said, thank goodness for that.
Now, that was a cheer-you-up moment, right?
Yeah, real cheery.
You know what I found funny? You said that your doctor said if he had to have cancer, multiple myeloma, would be his pick.
That's what
he said. That cheer you up?
Absolutely.
That seemed like an odd thing to say.
You know, that gave me confidence.
Oh, good.
Said, of all the cancers I could diagnose you with, this is one of the better ones because the treatment, we have so many choices for treatment, and the treatment regimens are effective, and we're really confident that we're going to be able to, you know, control this. He also said at that first appointment and has said subsequently that multiple myeloma is not a curable cancer.
Yeah.
I wonder if any cancer is really curable.
I doubt it.
No.
I doubt
but
it.
But this one, because it's in the blood, he said sometime anywhere between 6 months and 7 years, you'll probably have a recurrence. But at the moment, I'm in remission. So that's the good news.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, that's why I wanted to have you on the show, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So your doctor said you had cancer, and you start chemotherapy in December, right?
I started in December, and I had one cycle with a drug that didn't agree with me. It gave me a terrible rash, and I had some fever and vomiting and all that sort of thing.
Oh, my God.
And so when I saw the doctor the next time, he said, I'm taking you off this drug. And that was a drug that I had to apply for over the phone and have shipped to me by FedEx in the dark of night. It was highly regulated.
Oh, my God.
And all the insurance things attached to it involved a lot of phone calls. I thought, if I'm going to go through this every cycle, you know, I'd just as soon not have treatment. It's such a pain.
Now, tell us, why did you have to order the drugs? The doctor wasn't doing that? The hospital?
Let me see how this worked. The doctor ordered the prescription, and they called me from the drug company and said the drug will be delivered on X date. It was a pill I was to take every night, which for the first cycle I did. In a way, it's a blessing in disguise that it gave me this terrible rash, because the doctor did a little more research and found out that the actual kind of myeloma that I have is better treated by another drug anyway. So he put me for my second cycle. For four more cycles, I was on a drug that was administered in the chemo suite. So I had to go twice a week for treatment, 2 weeks on, 1 week off. I got a belly shot, and I got an infusion every last day of the cycle of this new drug. And I had to take steroids every day.
Lots of things. But how did you react after that initial drug that caused rashes and stuff? Was the second round of new drugs?
Much better. I mean, I had...
But did you have side effects?
I had fatigue, mostly. During chemo, I had fatigue. I had a little bit of nausea, not like some people suffer with. Yeah. I had no hair loss. This is a very targeted set of drugs, so I didn't lose my hair, and that was a blessing. But I was just exhausted, and I have to tell you, Tish, I did nothing but go for treatment and rest for 15 weeks.
And occasionally write on Facebook.
I did write on Facebook.
Which is great.
I was very openly blogging about this experience because I found it helped me to write about it, and I found that a lot of people were helped by my writing about it, too. So why hide in the dark? You know, it's not as if cancer is something we do on purpose to ourselves.
Yeah. And you know, I think the worst thing is I've known people who've had cancer who got depressed, and they isolate themselves.
Right, I'm sure.
And so they have no support.
Right.
And they're afraid to talk, and I think that is the worst. I understand it.
I do too. Especially if you
think it would be so difficult.
Especially if your prognosis is not cheerful, because then it's just, it's hard to pull yourself up. But I've always had a good prognosis from the beginning, and so I just said, "Let's get this done," and just went for treatment. And my last treatment was on March 16th. And I was declared in remission on May 4th.
Wow, that's amazing.
And now I'll go back for a three-month checkup and then a six-month checkup. But in the meantime, he keeps checking me because I call or go and see the nurse and say, I've got this or that. And he's so thorough that he doesn't want to miss anything. So
You know, I've heard that kidney problems can be a big side effect.
If you let
A very, very difficult one.
It's bad if you're too late. That's if your first symptom is kidney problems, your myeloma is probably pretty advanced.
Oh, God. Did you know that when you were getting the treatment, that if you have kidney problems, this could
be? Well, yeah. They always were checking my kidney function with the blood work because they want to make sure everything is, you know, fine. But they caught this early enough that this has never been an issue for me, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So
you didn't have to talk about things like stem cell transplants.
That's
for later on.
I'm glad you asked me that question because I almost forgot. With the first drug, the plan was at some point to do a bone marrow transplant. I was going to go to the Roswell Park Center in Buffalo, which is Cayuga Medical Center Oncology's partner, and have a bone marrow transplant. He said, you'll be in the hospital for 3 weeks. And I just thought, oh, damn, I don't really don't look forward to that.
Oh, my God,
what
no.
What do we do with a dog? And, what you know, where's Arthur going to stay? And how? It was just one of those things that I just, But the good news was when he switched me to the second drug and took me off the rash drug, he said, the best thing about this is that you won't need a bone marrow transplant.
Oh, really?
We were rejoicing over that. So it looks like I'm going to be able to avoid that.
Oh, my God.
We're going to keep our fingers
crossed.
You know,
I was thinking bone transplant, stem cell transplants, would be for people who are in the last stages. But they normally would give it to somebody in the early stages, huh?
With that other drug, apparently, yeah, because they want, you know, they don't want your bone, the bad cells to duplicate again. So they give you healthy bone marrow. I don't really honestly know the details. I just knew that was going to be one of the things, and it wasn't something I wanted. So I was overjoyed to find out that that was not part of the regimen with a new drug.
Oh, God. Yeah. You know what I was wondering, and I wonder about anybody who's diagnosed with a serious disease. Were you able during the treatment to go work at the theater, socialize, were you just hiding out in some ways just to preserve your energy?
Yeah, we had already decided to put homecoming players on hiatus after our last show last summer. So it was almost as if there was some sort of weird premonition. So we were not preparing a show, and that I couldn't have, so that's just as well, because I just did not have the energy.
Yeah.
I did, mostly I did writing and sleeping and coloring with my coloring app.
That is great.
Binge-watching cooking shows and Grey's Anatomy and ER, just really lying so low.
So, if you weren't lying low with cancer, that would have been a nice vacation, right?
Exactly. It would have been wonderful. And actually, when I was feeling all right, I always wondered if I shouldn't just get up and go and do something. But as soon as I did too much, I was always really exhausted.
Oh, I know that one.
I bet you do.
You know what I want to ask you, too, about diet? Did they ask you to go on a special diet? Did you get...
They
you know,
really didn't say a
prohibited
word.
From anything?
Nope. I had given up alcohol on my own before I was even diagnosed because it started to taste funny. So now I haven't had a drink for 7 months, and I guess you can call me sober, although I don't think I was an alcoholic. I certainly did like my wine, but it wasn't hard to stop drinking it.
Yeah, that's usually a sign that you probably aren't.
Yeah. So it's been 7 months, and... You know, my partner has a drink every day, and I go enjoy, and I just sip my seltzer, and it's fine. But we really didn't discuss diet. I got a huge packet of material, of course. But I have to tell you, Tish, I was not a person who wanted to go into every detail of what was the matter with me. I was not that kind of person. Mm-hmm. I was trusting of my care team, who were wonderful, to tell me what I needed to do. I didn't... You know, and when people on Facebook said, have you heard about this study or have you tried this? I just would just delete those comments because
really?
I didn't really want to hear from it because everyone is different.
Oh, yeah.
And what happened to somebody else may have absolutely nothing to do with your own
exactly,
experience. So just
exactly.
say, feel better and leave it at that. That's what we like to hear.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I asked that question about diet is because so many cancers are, you know, at least, you know, on a far reach.
Yeah.
Level.
Yes.
Caused by, my mother had lung cancer caused by smoking.
Right.
And things like that.
Right.
Yeah.
There was no answer as to why I have this cancer. The doctor said, I wish we knew. He said, there are some risk factors, but we really don't, sometimes cells just go rogue. So then I sort of let myself off the hook and said, I haven't done anything to make myself get this cancer.
Yeah. And it's not rare, but it's somewhat rare. I read that only 200,000 people a year.
He has quite a few cases of it right now, he said.
I wonder, I have to ask the doctor if it's getting more prevalent.
I don't know, I mean, environmental factors, you know.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Rachel Hockett. We're talking about health challenges, and hers is multiple myeloma. which is a cancer, and we're talking about her journey through this, I guess we can call it an adventure.
Oh, yeah. It's been a laugh riot adventure.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me, after diagnosis, how your family and friends reacted. Did you get support? Did people get scared of you?
I have the best family in the world. And, you know, I think maybe my daughter was the most freaked out. I have a son and a daughter. They started calling me every day, which they had never done before. And they have sort of desisted that practice again. But I was in touch with them very closely. And I have three sisters and a brother. And I have, you know, nieces and nephews abounding and grandnieces and nephews. Everybody in my family, you couldn't say enough good about, I can come and help if you want me to cook when you need somebody to come and go shopping for you. And they don't live in town. The only relative I have in town is my brother, who is absolutely wonderful, too, my brother and his wife.
Oh, that's good. So you must know the importance of having a support system, right? I just can't imagine not.
I can't imagine not either. I'm so blessed. And of course, Arthur was just the most tremendous caregiver. I mean, he's been through this before. He had a partner who died of cancer. He's been through this before. And as his doctor told him, you're in the boat rowing with Rachel. You're in it too.
Yeah.
And you are.
Yeah.
When you have somebody in the house with you, they can't avoid it.
Oh, of course not.
And of course, he didn't want to avoid it. He wanted to help because he's a nice person.
Yes, he is. I know him. Did you talk to friends and acquaintances? I mean, you're well known in the community because of this theater work. Did you talk intimately about this diagnosis, or did you just want to let people know I have cancer, so, you know, don't start screaming at me or asking me to smoke dope or something?
I didn't talk in too much detail about it. My blog always had to do with, you know, how I was feeling or how I was responding to a drug. I didn't talk about, and I've learned that, multiple myeloma, this or that. I never really got into the technical aspect in conversation or in my writing. The writing was to just help me sort out the feelings I was having as I was going through this extremely challenging and emotional experience.
Oh, yeah.
And people have thanked me for being so open because, as you say, a lot of people just want to go hide and get it over with or do whatever they're doing.
And also, I've noticed that some people, our friends, family, and other people we know in our community, sometimes they get scared of us.
I think so, yeah.
You know, and they're afraid to say anything.
I know.
Yeah.
I was trying to overcome that, too.
Yeah. And I think talking openly the way you do is helpful.
Well, it's not like we got cancer on purpose or we deserve cancer or that cancer is a dirty word. I think people are afraid, you know, for so many decades, a cancer diagnosis meant death.
Oh, yeah.
And the treatments for cancer now are so advanced and they're making strides every day. And my doctor says there are many, many ways we can treat this. You're not stuck with just one regimen.
Yeah,
if this doesn't work, we'll try something else.
Do you ever get tired of being in the medical culture and being a patient, so to speak?
I have to tell you, when I ended treatment after going three times a week to the oncology suite with my amazing, wonderful, lovely nurses, I was almost homesick for the place. It's the oddest thing.
Really?
And I do go back and visit. Well, these were the people who saved my life.
Oh, of course.
So I have this, and they're so lovely, and I just have this attachment to them. So I go and say hi, and if something's bothering me, I go and say, you know, like 2 days ago, my hip's bothering me. Okay, we're going to order an x-ray. Because they're very thorough, and that's what they have to be.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to become really sick of being a patient when you have to be watched and tested and make sure you're moving on the right path, right?
Well, if I were working with a doctor I didn't like or nurses I didn't like, I know this would have been an utterly unbearable experience.
Yeah.
So I just feel very lucky that Cayuga Medical Center has just such a loving, caring, knowledgeable, and you can complain about the weirdest little things to them. And no one ever looks at you cross-eyed or, you know, they take it seriously. They ask follow-up questions. They're really wonderful. I can't say enough about them.
Oh, I know. I mean, I've always heard that cancer treatment is something that a human being must go through, but it's so hard on your psyche and your body, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. Well, what they didn't tell me about is how I'll feel after chemo ends. And I have to say that it's been almost worse since chemo ended than it was during.
Chemo ended on April 5th. You went into remission.
No, in March. I ended March 16th was my last treatment.
Oh, okay.
Remission was announced on May 4th. And this is whatever the date is, June 1st. Happy June. And I've had neuropathy and numb feet and muscle pain and all these things that nobody says a word.
You mentioned that. Is that rare that it's happening to you?
No, it's not rare.
You just didn't want to mention it,
I worried because I didn't. I think, as Arthur said, well, if they told you about that, no one would ever sign up for cancer.
Or treatment.
Right, exactly.
Was that caused by the treatment? Is that what they presume?
Yeah, it's caused by the treatment. It's probably the belly shot I got, they think, is what has caused most of these after effects. But it's been a lot of weeks now, so I'm kind of, can this end pretty soon now? But I've heard that the numb feet can last 2 years. Isn't that dreadful?
That is amazing.
And you walk out, you sort of walk, you feel unbalanced because you're not feeling your feet fully under you. It's not great, but it sure beats the alternative.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So to tell us a little bit about your mental state in the aftermath. You're going to go back to your theater. You're going to continue your life as normal.
Yes, we had planned to do a show later this summer, but that was a little more ambitious than we could afford to be. So unfortunately, we have canceled that. We are going to be back in the Kitchen Theater with a play by Arthur, and we are going to. We'll get there. But we just looked at each other one day and said, this is too much for now to produce and direct. I'm just still coming out of this treatment, and I don't feel myself. And it's a strain that we don't have to put on ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're putting that off. But we are going to both be involved in the 1 minute play festival, which is a much more finite
perfect amount of time.
1 minute I can do.
Did this treatment and the cancer diagnosis, did it affect you mentally?
I think so.
Regard to who you are and so on.
Oh, I think I've been absolutely changed by this. When I found out I was in remission, there was, it sounds corny, but there was a kind of glow in the world I had not ever really noticed. It was like, okay, I'm not going to die in my sleep tonight. I have a life I can look forward to. My doctor said, I fully expect to refer you to my successor when I retire in 15 years.
Mm.
And hearing that was just, okay, I've been through this challenge. I've come out the other side. And it's almost like having your personality kind of washed and cleaned and scrubbed. And I just feel so grateful. I feel so grateful all the time that I am a survivor.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you find that you talk about different things with people? Obviously, you talk about the cancer a little bit, but has it changed your perspective as an artist?
I think my powers of observation have always been pretty good. I think that I will notice things in a different way when I look at actors and plays and movies. It's very hard to describe. I'm still working on a cogent understanding of exactly how this happens. But everybody says, you know, cancer will change you. And I thought, well, yeah, because, you know, you have to go through all this crap and it's painful.
I know.
And it'll change it because you're
And also the fact that you don't know whether you're going to die. I mean,
I
know this had a good prognosis, but still.
Well, it always hangs over you now. I have to go have this hip x-ray because I've had a sore hip for a couple of weeks. Of course, I'm going to worry that the cancer is back. That's the natural thing.
Yeah.
And I might add, because I'm sure that there are lots of people listening who are just like me, that I do not like going to the doctor at all.
Yeah.
I have always feared. I don't like the dentist, the doctor, any kind of doctor. And I go.
It's also because you lose control of it, right? I mean, you're
somebody,
a director.
Yeah. Somebody might tell you something's wrong with you. And I mean, that's exactly what happened. So see, I was right. But I go anyway. And I'm very grateful that I went and had my yearly physical, even though I go resisting with every fiber of my body. So I've just said over and over again, get your yearly blood work. Because if I had not gone, if I had been one of those people who waits 2-3 years with no symptoms, who knows?
Yeah, I know. It could have been.
Could have been
what they call deadly in our medical world.
Yeah, could have been a lot worse.
Then you said after you went into remission, that you wanted to get back to the business of survival. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about that. Did you find yourself interested in other things besides theater and writing?
I don't think my interests have really changed. Mm. I think I've just been sort of picked up, kind of. It's as if everything is an opportunity in a way that it wasn't before.
Really?
I have a chance to do something that I might not have had, so I appreciate it more. Uh-huh. I appreciate that I can get up in the morning and go for a walk, or get up in the afternoon and make dinner and choose nice ingredients and cook up something delicious. Uh-huh. And everything is just such a reward, because who knew what would come of this? I mean, I always thought I'd be all right, but you can never be sure.
Oh, I know, not with cancer.
I remain unsure. I mean, I'm still in that post-treatment period. I have to go for a three-month check and then a six-month check. So, you know, you never know. But I do trust my doctor, and I think he wouldn't tell me. He expects me to live for a long, long time with this if that weren't true.
Yeah, because it's obviously a good reason, but I know a lot of people who go through catastrophic illness like cancer, and they end up depressed for months or never come out of it. And so it's so nice to hear someone who's appreciating the days and realize what you've been given.
I've always been a glass half full kind of person from birth. Uh-huh. And I am also on an antidepressant, I might add, which helps.
That certainly does.
Just a tiniest little dose that just takes the edge off.
Oh, that's perfect.
But I'm not, I would not call myself depressed. In pain, I'm often in pain, but I'm not, my spirits are not, my spirits are great.
Yeah. Do you rely on any kind of faith?
Just spirituality. I haven't been to a regular church since my first husband and I ran a theater in a church and were members way back in the 70s. I never found an organized church since then. But I do believe in, for lack of a better word, a higher power.
Mm.
I do feel as if I'm embraced by some sort of good fortune, whatever you call it, whether you call it God or
some
luck.
Some kind of spirit. Yeah.
So I would say I am a spiritual person.
You know what? I love it when people have catastrophic illness like this, that they feel like they've been helped by something outside of real life.
Yeah, yeah. I do. I do feel that. I feel grateful. Gratitude is spiritual, I think.
Yeah.
Gratitude is a huge part of how I feel.
Yeah.
Right now.
Oh, that's wonderful. We don't have too much time left, but I was wondering, did you ever join a support group? Or,
you know, people have asked me that, and I'm not a joiner. Ever since I ran a PTA for 4 years, and I did the other thing before, I was like, groups, get me away from groups where there's lots of people. So I haven't gone. But I am considering going in and just chatting with somebody at the Cancer Resource Center, because I hear the best things about that.
Oh,
place.
They're good.
And they're so nice. And I could just go in and say, you know, you'll understand if I say this, this, and this.
That's exactly what it's good for.
Right.
Yeah, I've had Bob Ritter on the show. He's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm gonna think about that.
Yep. Well, we are almost out of time. Do you want to give some contact information? Do you want anybody to get in touch with you somehow?
Sure, be fine. Anybody who wants to, hear more or get some advice about how to cope with the challenge of chemo, sure. I'd be very, very glad to hear from people. And my email address is rachwrites, RACHEWRITES, @gmail.com.
Oh, great. Well, Rachel Hockett, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a pleasure to see you and to see you well.
Thank you, Tish, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.